This is the Home Tech Podcast Show number 36, recorded on July 21st, 2011. I am your host, Jim Collison, broadcasting live and live on Ustream from the Average Guy Studios here in a very hot and rainy Bellevue, Nebraska, and posted each week at theaverageguy.tv. You can contact the show, podcast at theaverageguy.tv. Follow me on Twitter. That's the easiest way to get show announcements and things that are going on. I tweet oftentimes right before the show starts with links. You can just do that at Jay Collison or find us on Facebook, and we'll talk a little bit more about that in the show here. Find us on Facebook just by searching The Average Guy Podcast. All right, joining me tonight, three of my favorite guys in the whole world. The first one is Andrew Morris. Andrew is from Melbourne, Australia, and is just a overall good guy. Andrew, I ran out of nice things to say about you. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing well, Jim. I'm worried if you've run out of nice things to say about me.
Well, I've been saying nice things about you all week, and tonight it just I ran out of things. So how's things on your end of the world?
Oh, well, you know, we're living the dream down here, so it's all good.
That's nice. That's nice. I'm still thinking about a winter in Australia. I got to get down there. And
you got to get down here.
Be good to see you. Also tonight with us, Christian Johnson. Christian is behind all things at bios-mods.com. He's the creator and founder of theaverageguy.tv, at least the code behind it and making it work. And he is all things smart. Christian, how you doing tonight?
Hey, I'm doing well, guys. Thanks for asking.
Good. How's the summer going? It's almost over.
Summer's rocking. Well, it's hot. It's
I know, but
good 95 down here, which is rare for us. So we were out without AC for about 2 months and finally got that reinstalled.
What?
Because we had new heating and central air done in the winter.
Right.
And they pulled out the old air conditioning when they redid everything, and we never installed the new one. So we were just dying. We're like, you know
really?
What?
Really?
You know what? It's time to get this done. So,
yeah. Yeah, you got
I went in yesterday. Yep.
You got 8 or 9 servers in the basement, but no air conditioning. That can't be good.
Well, surprisingly, the basement's the only one that actually can stay cool. Like my monster box with that Phenom 6-core at 1090T. If I put it up to the normal clock speed without air conditioning, oh boy, that fan gets loud on the computer.
I bet it does.
So I keep it nice and low at like 800 megahertz. But now that the AC's back on, back up to full power. So.
Awesome. And so the air is running right now. You're feeling good. It's nice and cool in there.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, good.
Comfortable.
Well, good to have you. And I know you've had a busy summer. School doesn't start for you guys till September, right?
Is that correct?
Yeah. So my kids have about 3 or 4 weeks left, and they're not too excited about that. Summer seems to go fast here.
Indeed.
Yeah. Also with us tonight, Rich O'Neill. Rich is the new host of the show Random with Rich, a new Average Guy podcast starting soon.
What are you talking about?
And
yes, of course. What are we going to do this? We're gonna pull up the Twitter stream, and we're going to base all of our comments. We're just going to select random tweets, and we're going to have a cast of like 6 of us sitting around, and we're just going to call up. Yeah. Whatever would come to our mind, right?
It's going to be awesome. Wait, as soon as Google Plus gets a little more robust on the video side, I think that would be the right way to use Google Plus implementation. I've been real skeptical about going on Google Plus for the podcast just because, one, I think Skype's still a little bit better at this point.
Interesting.
We're showing the live video via Skype. I've done both. And at least so far in the recorded version of this, Skype seems to be a little bit better. Now, we did some off testing with Google Plus last night after the home server show, and I don't know, it's coming up. Eventually it'll get there, but imagine this, Rich. So we would start a hangout, and then we would allow tech guys to kind of come in, and it's you and me just throwing out. You are great at asking questions. And so I thought just you and me throwing out questions, and people can just talk about it, record it, and throw it up on the... Throw it up on the site. What do you think?
That could be pretty fun, actually. The more you talk about it, the more it sounds like a good idea.
I think it's got some potential. Very low editing requirements. We would just ever said
just
it's fine. I might have to beep a few things.
It needs to be an explicit categorization on iTunes as well.
Well,
for some of the people that I follow.
Well, yeah, it'd be tough because I don't know. Well, anyways.
We could take a pledge beforehand to try to not use too many cuss words.
I could just bleep them out. I'm getting
bleep them out.
I'll have to figure that out. Rich, what's keeping you busy these days?
Just work and I don't know. You know, trying to hook up with my daughter whenever I can so I can go visit my granddaughter, those sorts of things.
Good.
As far as tech goes,
yeah.
I've been having a bit of a struggle with Windows Home Server 2011. And I think maybe my router's part of the problem, the UPnP, which I think UPnP is probably just a disaster on most routers. That's the thing that automatically sets your ports for you. When a program calls for a port to be open, UPnP on the router will say, okay, yeah, I'll open that for you. And so I've been trying to, you know, one of the features about the new Home Server 2011 is the streaming ability based on Silverlight. Mm-hmm. So I logged in to try to check that out, and none of my media was populating the media library on that remote access. But yeah, it was kind of strange. And you know, I don't want to talk too long about this, but I tried this and that, and went around, and I was able to get it work eventually. But it just seems really something between the software, 2011 software, and maybe my router. There's something going on there. So I've been trying to solve that, and you know,
all right,
see if
but
I can
put your out on Windows Home Server 2011, giving that a shot. If folks want more information about that, they can pop over to the Home Server Show. That's just homeservershow.com. We do that podcast on Wednesday nights at 8:30 Central, and we talk about that to Dave and John and I. Spend some time around the Home Server, and so if you have some questions, Christian, any advice to Rich on his router there? Anything sound?
Yeah, depending on how you have the remote access set up, normally you PNP and keep PN, but nothing ever happens with the ports. So you normally have to go into your router setup page and manually set things. And for Windows Home Server 2011, you need to set port 80443, 4125, and 3389, which is your remote desktop gateway services for remote desktop connection, your general media and other connections. 443 is your secure socket layer HTTPS, and 80 is your regular HTTP. As for the Server 2011 UNPN capability, it's interesting how you'll set up the remote page and it'll tell you UNPN won't work for Windows Home Server, but if you go in and set those ports manually, it still works fine. And I find it interesting how, like, the Verizon modem that we have that's doing the port forwarding, like, Skype can forward all its UDPs within seconds right to the router. And
yeah,
Home Server can't pick it up. So UNPNP in general is a technology that is not really standardized, and different routers do it different ways, and different failures happen. It's a very hard issue to diagnose.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
So
that it's not standardized.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they had high hopes for universal plug and play, especially on the routers. I think some people thought that was going to make, you know, pretty big difference and make things easier to set up. And it seems like it was a fairly botched, that's the word I'm looking for, implementation. So
yeah.
I've just left mine turned off. And
yeah, I did set them manually. And when I went and checked the in the dashboard, I went and checked the remote web access tab in the dashboard itself. You know, I had everything working. I know I had everything working, but it was saying, you know, I got a message, the router is not working. It's like, well, the router's not working on the internet. I'm actually on my page now, you know, so I don't know.
Yeah.
It's not understand something about between the server and the router, UPnP is not.
Well, you know, if you're the average guy, the router just scares you to death for the most part. And so, you know, most we get a lot of tech guys that listen to us. And so for those folks, they pretty much know how to get into the router. If you're listening to that and the router scares you to death, there's good reason. It can be tough. I know D-Link and Cisco have made an effort to make that setup wizard a little bit easier for folks to get into. But it's just not intuitive for folks to type in, you know, 192.168.1.1 and then a password that's embedded somewhere in the instructions, and then they get this weird screen that doesn't look like anything else they've ever seen before. And so, you know, again, that's an area where I think the average guy is fairly screwed when it comes to technology and their router. They set them up, they leave them unsecure, they You know, I feel sorry for folks. And of course, so this is a good place. If you're listening to this and you haven't, you need some help with your router, of course, you can shoot us an email, podcast@theaverageguy.tv. It'd be interesting maybe to do a router show at some point. We'll maybe do some screenshots or share some screens and show folks some of the easier ways to get things done with the router. Anyways.
Yeah,
okay.
We could do.
Yeah. Anyways, welcome, Rich. Long introduction, but welcome. And congratulations on Random with Rich.
Thank you.
It's been a long time coming.
It's a great show. You've done a great job with it.
Thank you.
All right. I want to remind some folks, one of the things I've been thinking about for a while is how to continue to drive some traffic or at least some conversation around what we do here at the Home Tech Podcast. I'm not really – we've talked in the past about setting up some forums, and I don't think I'm still ready for forums yet. I don't know if we have enough people to pull forums off and to make it work right. One of the experiments I want to try over the next maybe month or two is to drive folks to this Facebook group site that I started. We just call it the Average Guy Podcast Network out on Facebook. I mention it at the beginning of every show and just say, you know, go to Facebook, search for the Average Guy Podcast Network. If you go out there and then sign up to be a member of that page, you get alerted or notified of any kind of new post is put out there, including a new feature I did this week, which is I send out an invite to the group for the podcast. So you kind of get reminded that the podcast is live and what time it's going to be live at. If we ever change the time, you'll get a notification that the podcast has changed. And each week after the show, I'll just go out there and schedule the next show and time. We've had some folks over the last couple days join us, but gentlemen, here's my thoughts, and then you can kind of pick this apart a little bit. So my thought is we'll post the podcast when it comes out. We'll post that link out there and folks can make comments to it. Of course, you can always go to theaverageguy.tv and that page and post comments if you want. Nobody ever has, but that doesn't mean you can't. But certainly Facebook is a lot easier. One of the features that I saw on here that was pretty convenient is this idea of docs. And so you can create a doc, you can put information into the doc, people can edit that doc or add to it if they want. It kind of is like a stream. Or you can make a comment on the doc. I thought what that would be is a nice way for folks to share information if they wanted to post something. I went out there and posted I started a doc, Your Opinion of Google+, and I posted that out there, allowing folks to go in there and then fill that out. The nice thing about that is it's completely searchable from the page in Facebook. So if I wanted to look up router discussion, I could type in router discussion in here, and if we had started one about the routers, folks could find it. Fairly simple. The thing I like about Facebook is it's easy to use. A lot of people are in it, and the entries are short and compact and kind of nice. It's not, you know, forum software tends to spread those posts out forever. People have to sign up for them. I'm just trying to create an environment where folks are already there. Guys, what do you think? Is that if we went out there and worked on something like that, you think we could draw a few folks out to it? Do you see any drawbacks to it?
I don't see any drawbacks to it. Go ahead. Go ahead, Andrew.
Go ahead, Rich.
Yeah, no, I think it sounds like a good idea, you know. I'm actually looking for it right now.
Yeah, give that a shot. Andrew, thoughts?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say it's as long as we don't get the usual unwanted traffic on Facebook, it's a good idea.
Yeah, one of the things, the membership, you can, because I'm a group moderator, there's some things I can do for folks who you know, we do want to create a nice environment for individuals to come in and be able to post. We're not looking for fights. We don't want people picking fights. We don't want people tearing people down for their opinion. But that doesn't mean, you know, you can't disagree either.
Exactly.
Christian, any thoughts? Yeah.
No, I like it. I think it's an easy way to keep track of stuff, especially when you're just on there and see, upcoming podcast.
Yeah. Rich, were you able to find it?
Yep, I got it. Yep.
So pretty easy to find. When you go out to the group, the easiest way is just join it. It'll say join group, and you can click that, and I'll approve you in. And I'll pretty much approve anybody at this point who comes in. So, we've had good luck so far. I haven't had anybody get out of line in that. We'll moderate it. Gentlemen, I'll want your help moderating that, especially Andrew and Christian there. Let's give it a shot. One of the thought was it's kind of a gateway drug into forums. I thought if we could build a nice community out here and get 200 or 300 group members, and we could get some a constant stream of forums going or posts going. We could maybe move that from here to Facebook into a full-fledged forums. And it might give us some ideas of what people are interested in talking about. If you got a question on something, you can post it out here, and folks will get notified. If you're a group member, folks will get notified when a new post is put in. So kind of acts like forums without all the necessary forum setup. There is no organization. That's the bad part. But I think we won't have enough discussion to really need that quite yet. So give that a try. Head out, open Facebook. Hopefully you're on Facebook by now. Head out to Facebook, type in The Average Guy Podcast, and you'll find that. Join us, and then let's try this experiment. If it doesn't work, we'll just cut bait. It's not a big deal. No money invested. Nothing wrong with that. So give it a try.
Nothing ventured, nothing gained.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. One other bit of news this week. I had spent a bunch of time around switching over the RSS feed, and this is for folks who download the podcast directly from the site or have set up a feed other than an iTunes. The old feed is still up and working, but over the next couple months, I want to work you off that. So if you use a manual feed for the podcast, and if you don't know what I'm talking about, you probably don't. But if you use a manual feed for the podcast, and you might want to go out to the site and grab the new one. It's under the Podomatic podcast section on the right hand side. You'll see where it says RSS feed. Just grab that and put that into your reader. It will actually allow you. I opened that up so you can get all the posts. I was limiting you to 10 at a time, and you can get all. I've opened it up to 50, so you can go all the way back to podcast one. This week I had Ken write in, and he said, "Hey guys, love the show. Just discovered the podcast and listened to everyone available on iTunes." That's always a little scary, but that was 10 back. After all those episodes after 23, all that in 1 week. So 10 podcasts in 1 week. Ken, thanks for doing that. That's great. Anyway, he says, "I just got access to the music service called Spotify." We're going to talk about that here in a second. It just became available in the U.S. and would be a good topic for the show, so I thought I'd bring it in. Thanks for that, Ken. And this proves if you send me an email at podcast@theaverageguy.tv, I do read them. Also, you wanted a Google invite. And I shipped one off to him as well, so he got that running. And then he said, "Finally, is it possible to bulk download, or better yet, make available to iTunes episodes prior to 23? I had been limiting that to 10, like I'd said, and I blew that out to 50. So, Ken, you can go back out and download if you want. If you just started listening to the podcast and you wanted to go back, the RSS feed on the site now will take you all the way back to 1, and I've loaded all those shows on the site, so you can take a peek at that. We'll be moving away from Podomatic and moving completely onto the site for the hosting of the show. So a little bit of maintenance there. Christian, thanks for the code to get me started on that this week. That was always nice. I appreciate that. And this is how it works with Christian and I. It's great. So I have a really hard problem, and I say, "Christian, I have no idea what to do," right? So Christian throws some things at me, like rapid fire. "Here, take this, take that." And I say, "Okay, let me digest it," right? So then we hang up, and I look, and I try some things out, and I test some stuff, and I mess with the code, and I spent all day messing with it to where we got it right. But I really learned a lot on kind of how to do some, how to make that audio player work, and FTP the podcast up to the site. Now we have it working. I have it all documented. So Christian, thanks for doing that for me.
Not a problem.
It was good. So Spotify, guys, let's talk that came out last week or 2 weeks ago. It may even be longer than that. I know it's in the news. And have either three of you gotten invites to Spotify yet?
No. Anybody? I haven't.
Rich, no. Christian?
Nope.
No? Andrew?
No, not me yet.
I'm okay. Not even sure what it is exactly.
Well, let me back up a little bit. So Spotify is a music service that was popular in the UK. It's a lot like Rhapsody, a lot like Yahoo Music. It's a subscription service. We can say Zune. We should probably say it's a lot like the Zune subscription. It's a subscription music service that they do have a free version. They have a $4.99 version, and they have a $9.99 version. Go out to Spotify, Spotify, Spotify.com. The free version allows you unlimited access to any music you want. In fact, I was playing music before the show. I can minimize I'll minimize that, and there's an ad out there. Boy, well, let's see if I can click that ad off. There we go. And so you can see out there, I'm kind of showing the player for Spotify now. It's a lot like iTunes in the way it looks, and it the beauty of it though is you can, with the free version, you can search for and play thousands, millions of music tunes. You can't download them. You can't take them with you. It's only on your PC. It works a lot like Pandora, except you can pick all the music. The $4.99 version allows you to actually then what's the difference? I forgot already on the $4.99. The $9.99 version, let's talk about that real quick, allows you to download it and sync it with your mobile device. So it's a subscription music service. It's done really well in Europe, and now it's moved here to the United States. Andrew, do you guys have access to that yet in Australia? Has that hit there yet?
I'm not sure. I haven't had a look at it yet, so... Anything's possible, I guess.
It does. They're doing a subscription or a model, though, where at least here in the U.S., you have to get these invites to make it work. Have we heard that story somewhere before?
Mm-hmm. The viral thing.
Yeah, it's Google. Of course, Google Plus rolled out that way, and you know, it's a good looking service. I installed it last night. I got an invite from somebody on Twitter. I installed it last night, and tonight I was using it to play the tunes for the pre-show, and so that works quite well. And now I can't find the Skype window to bring it back, bring you guys back here. Let's.
So how does that work? You become a member, and then you can invite people? Is that how it works?
Yeah, that's how it's supposed to work. I don't have any invites yet. Somebody said maybe you have to subscribe into it and pay for it before they'll give you invites. I haven't seen those yet. But another one of those, like Rhapsody, like Yahoo, like Zune, this one has a press, like I said, has had a pretty good track record in the UK, and now is making its way to North America. So check that out. If you haven't, it doesn't sound like you guys have messed with it much, but if you're looking for a new music service, I'm going to continue to use the free version. The player looks a lot like iTunes. I have to admit, it operates a lot better than iTunes. I installed it. It started looking for music on my computer right away. It found all the music in my home server folders and then just linked them right into the player. The $4.99 version then would allow me to upload my music to Spotify as well so I could look for it. So that I could use it on other PCs as well. So remember, we've talked about the services of kind of loading what you have. Although with the streaming, streaming anything, I'm not sure I'm going to want to. I mean, I'm kind of thinking if I'm going to pay for streaming, I'm just going to ditch all the music I've ever bought, right?
Yeah,
I don't know.
I'm still skeptic.
Yeah? Why?
It's kind of like an ebook versus a paper book. I still like the idea that I can go and pull something off a shelf. I'm still old school.
Yeah. Well, I know Christian, you're not as old as we are. What do you think about music subscription? Do you still have to buy everything, or would you just rather subscribe to it? Deep sigh.
Subscriptions are like marriages. Once you buy the subscription, it's like $9.99 a month, and you got to keep contributing to it, and it keeps sucking whether you use it a lot or use it a little. Rather, as if you're in a music listening mood, you want some new jams to put on your iPod, then go ahead and buy. And then the next month, you're still listening to that old stuff, so why would you want to pay again? Again, this is my argument number 4 in the rules of acquisition for why you should get Subsonic. So if you want a free cloud where you can also have that good go-luck feeling of buying music and putting it on your server, then head over to subsonic.org and watch all your solutions be magically answered.
Are they sponsoring us now?
They are. That's the sponsor commercial for the show.
Oh, okay.
Thanks, Subsonic. Thanks for sponsoring the Home Tech Podcast. The $4.99 is unlimited, plays local files as well. You can one of the things, there's a social element to this, so you can send links to friends. And if they're members, like they can listen to... Yeah, just like that. No ads, though. $4.99 takes out the ads.
Yeah, $4.99 is not bad. I guess it's just a question of... you know, a lot of people are still going mobile with, like, I want to bring my iPod and listen to something. So Spotify is for the people who sit at a work desk from 9 to 5 and want to listen to some music while hitting ignore on their cell phone when their boss is calling, you know.
All right, so explain to me how it's different than Pandora. I must have missed that.
Well, Pandora, you can't choose the songs that you want. So with Spotify, I can type in Pat Benatar, and it brings up all the her songs, and then I can drag those into the queue and
so
just play them.
It's a Rhapsody competitor.
Yeah. Rhapsody. Now, and the difference between this and the Zune Player, of course, would be with Zune, you get 10 songs that you get to keep each month for your $14.99. So a little bit different twist there.
Also, well, so 6% more of a price tag per month.
Yeah. Well, and so speaking of subscription, let's just real quick talk about Netflix. So Netflix announced last week that they would be splitting their streaming and their DVD service. It, of course, was all over Facebook. So if you haven't heard about this by now, either you're not on Facebook or you live someplace where there's no internet. Our Family Video, which is a local video store here in Nebraska. You didn't know that, Rich?
No, I didn't know they're actually splitting the service.
They're splitting it.
Like right now, we get streaming and we get two DVDs, and I think we pay, I don't know, $14 or $15.99.
Right. Well, so now
they're going to actually go ahead.
Now they're going to split that. So $8.99.
No.
Yes. $8 for DVDs, $8 for streaming. If you want both, $16.
So, okay. All right.
Yeah. Is that what you're paying now?
I think it's up to $15.99. I'm not sure.
How many DVDs do you get for that?
Two at a time and unlimited streaming, of course.
Okay. So. All right. Well, we're on the lower plan. Christian, you guys have a Netflix?
Uh-huh.
And you're on the lower plan? Do you get DVDs or are you only doing streaming?
We're doing DVDs.
Okay.
That's a shame they split it. That's a dumb marketing move. It's just going to get people eternally confused. It's going to change everyone's subscriptions. They're going to start making charges to people's bank accounts, and then people are going to be like, why am I getting double charged? And then everyone's going to go insane, and they're going to hire more support staff, and they're going to lose more customers, and then they're going to be paying more out than they're taking in. And then their net gain for making a stupid decision is going to cost them dearly.
You got to figure it out.
Okay, what's next?
Well, so if you're not aware, go out and check your Netflix account. There's some changes. The local video store here in town said on their billboards, we'll never change our prices. And that's not true, right? They will. But
for our geeks here, too, they are starting to add stuff to their instant queue. The Star Trek Next Generation seasons 1 through 7 is now an instant queue. So that's going to make a lot of geeks happy across the world.
Yeah, well, hopefully their instant queue will get better. And like you said, they're going to add some things to it. We've become very dependent on Netflix. And at one point, I really felt good about moving all my video collection. I mean, not even buying videos anymore because more and more things were becoming available. I don't, you know, I guess we could work ourselves off the $8.99 or $7.99 DVD plan and move all to streaming, but that I don't think that works. I think we're going to go all streaming, and then we're going to buy or we're going to rent videos locally or from Redbox if we need a new, you know, if we need a new arrival. So it's going to cause some people to switch, and I know some folks are pretty angry about it. It has been a pretty significant price jump. Andrew, there in Melbourne, Netflix has a market there, I assume?
Yeah, I think there's a Netflix market down here. It's still pretty much the, from what I understand, it's still the rental one. So, you know, get the subscription, arrive in the mail, watch it, copy it, do whatever you do with it, and then send it back. I'm not so sure about the streaming one. We tend not to consume our media that way. We tend to acquire it through other sources and watch it or keep it. So I think there are some ISP partnerships down here, but I think it's mainly with the main players, so the likes of the big ISPs, so they've got the bandwidth to deliver the content.
All right. Okay. Netflix, let's wrap that up. Yeah, I guess Rich didn't want to talk about Netflix. He's like, let's move on. Let's get it.
Yeah, just had a look on Spotify too. It's not yet available in Australia.
Okay.
and so not sure what the deployment will be like out here.
Cool, Rich. Since we haven't had you on for a while, let's move into random things with Rich. I'm changing the title of the podcast as we go. Random things with Rich. What do you got for us tonight, Rich?
With a microphone unmuted, Rich.
Oh yes,
microphone. Okay. Tell me about the end of that last podcast, that unnamed podcast that you do with Dave and John. Tell me what you guys tacked on the end of that.
Oh, for last week's show, 131.
Was that Songify?
That was Songify on the iPhone, yes. And that was Dave. Dave put that together.
Oh, man. That went on too long. I'm sorry. It is pretty funny. The first time I heard it, I go, this is ridiculous. And I showed everybody. And then they just said, okay, that's good. Go away.
Yeah. Dave played it again last night on the show. And he would not quite as long, but it was fairly funny. If folks are wondering, show 143 over at thehomeservershow.com. Go to the very last minute. And if you're a home server fan at all, if you didn't listen all the way to the end of the podcast, it's pretty disturbing.
Yeah. So that's only for the iPhone, right? This Songify.
Yeah, I haven't used that at all.
It's pretty dead simple. You download it. It's an iPhone app. You hit a button. You just recite anything. You could say, let's talk about Netflix. Let's talk about outrageous prices. And it will take the words and actually assign a pitch to them, like notes, like in a song, like a melody, but sort of in a rap sort of way. So the song is playing along in the background, and your spoken word, which you don't sound anything like yourself anymore, you're actually sort of singing this little each phrase. And however they figured out how to break the phrases up, although you are speaking in phrases, but they do that perfectly, as far as I can tell. It's pretty ingenious.
And so it's like an auto-tune, right? On the voices, it's an auto-tune.
Yeah, okay, that's what it is, I guess, yeah. But it gets boring pretty fast because they give you like three song templates you can mess around with. And then they say, would you like to try this song template? And you say, yeah, sure, let me try it. And they say, well, good, it costs like 99 cents or $1.99. It's like, oh, well, I don't really want to try it. I thought you were going to let me try it. But
do they have some free ones that come with it?
They have three. And then after that, you've got to got to buy.
I'm sensing maybe a Christian's Corner special coming out of this Songify, maybe. So maybe somebody who has it who's listening and has got an iPhone can create a Christian's Corner Songify and then send that to me.
I'm feeling that.
That would be good. Rich, you broke your jailbroke your iPhone?
I jailbroke it, and then I updated it.
Wasn't that on jailbreak it?
So what did that do?
Well, it killed the jailbreak.
Okay.
So I jailbroke the iPhone. I just thought, everybody's talking about it, so I thought I'd try it. And I really didn't do anything with it. I looked around at it to see, well, what happened here? And, I could see the repo of all of the apps, the jailbroke apps. And I thought it looked like, a little bit like a Linux repo. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that's what jailbreaking does. It's a Linux thing, is it, or is it not? Am I making
a browser?
When you jailbreak your iPhone, is that some kind of Linux-based program?
I think it's inserting code into the application stack so that it makes it look like it's just. So it points it to different software sources.
Okay. All right. Well, anyway, I thought the repo
which
looked like
necessarily kosher.
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing too, right? So you don't really know what you're getting. Maybe by word of mouth, or maybe you do a Google search, you might find something. There's some interesting things on there that you could do. You could do remote sync. I mean, wireless sync with your iTunes, I think. So you wouldn't have to actually physically connect your iPhone or your iPod to you know, your USB connection to your PC. You could actually wirelessly sync. There's a lot of other things to do, but you know, the first thing I noticed the next morning, I was driving to work and I was downloading something on the way so I could listen, and all of a sudden, the phone locked up, and it locked up in a way. I mean, the phone's locked up once or twice before, but it locked up in a different way. And I thought, oh, geez, am I going to be able to get through the day without a phone? And it took about a minute, maybe a minute and a half before it released and actually went ahead and let me reboot. So, you know, that's when I thought, I don't know what about this.
Now, why did you jailbreak? I mean, what was the motivation behind it? Just because you could?
I knew I could. I knew I could jailbreak it, and I knew I could reset it. I actually, there's a situation that came up. It's a little bit of a story. I don't want to get too long into it, but basically, I thought maybe I got something on my iPhone that wasn't quite legit. You know, I mean, it's a PDF, and if you look in the news about PDFs and iPhone, you'll see there's something going on there, a security thing going on there. So I got a PDF that I shouldn't. That looked suspicious to me, and I tried to open up this PDF, and it didn't open. You know, it was from a legitimate source, but the person, when I called the person finally, they said, "Well, I never sent you that." So, you know, anyway, that's the story. So I said, "Well, you know, what am I going to do here?" And I looked around, and I saw, well, you can restore your phone. You know, you plug in to your iTunes and you hit a backup and then you say restore your phone, and it basically it just reinstalls installs the firmware, which basically breaks anything that was in there, and you know, so if you were hacked, if that's possible, and I guess it is, but you know, I don't know anybody that's been hacked, but you know, so mm-hmm. I did that, and then I was thinking, well, you know what, this works great, because it worked fine, and I brought back all my music. Actually, that's a good thing to know. If you ever have to do that, you know, it does work. So then I thought, well, you know, people are always talking about breaking their iPhone, jailbreaking their iPhone. So I thought I'd try it. So I did. But, you know, my first experience was that drive when it was locking up on me the next morning on the way to work. And so that kind of put me off a little bit, you know.
Not quite as glamorous, Rich, as it's made out to be.
I don't really have a need for a lot of those things. Now, there's some cool things. Like, you can't just drag and drop any old file to put on your iPhone, right? Well, if you jailbreak your iPhone, you can download this one app anyway called Disk Aid. And when you do that, you know, you can drag anything and drop it on there and use it like a USB thumb drive, right? So you can do that. So that's kind of interesting, you know?
Hmm.
Yeah. So... anyway,
although I can do that on my Android phone without having to jailbreak that,
you can. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, yeah. That's Apple's world. You know, everything is in a little box, and you know, but you know, and then I connected my iPhone to my PC, and I saw an update, and I says, "Oh yeah, go ahead and update." And then I was laughing at myself. Oh yeah, you just killed your jailbreak, but that's cool. You know, I wasn't really doing anything with it. I just wanted to try it.
So it must be pretty easy to jailbreak that phone then. I mean, did you find that, looked that up and
did it? Yeah, it was real easy. I just used Cydia. Don't ask me how to spell it. It might be Cydia, not sure, but it begins with a C. It's either C-I or C-Y-D-I-A. You just go there, you run, Jim, I can't remember specifically, but you run the app, the Cydia app. And basically, that's it. It reboots maybe at one time or so, and that's it. You're jailbroke. Now, nothing really looks different. You can still go to the iTunes store. You can still download apps. But, you know, it's jailbroke, so then you can start messing with different themes on your iPhone. You can do the wireless sync. You can do, extended notepads or whatever you need, or different maybe office suites that are available in their repo, you know, and tons of different things you can do. But most of those things, pretty much all those things I don't need. I just don't need, if I wanted them, I would definitely take jailbreak, because you can't get them otherwise, you know.
So you're pretty content with the way it is without having to have it jailbroken.
Yeah. Actually, I'm happy in the little Apple world, in my little Apple box.
Yeah, and those 3GSs are fairly cheap at this point, right? I mean, you can get those for $50 or so.
Yeah, actually, yeah. I did a trade with my daughter about maybe 4 or 5 months ago. And I took her 3G, that she 3GS that she had bought for like $70, and traded her for the iPhone 4, which I was up for a new phone. So I just traded it to her because I'm a great dad, I guess. I don't know why.
So. You are a good guy.
It's a temporary insanity, but you know, I didn't really care. Yeah, and she was thrilled with it. So it was cool.
Christian, any desire to move to the iPhone for you?
Never.
Oh, maybe, wow.
Maybe right. Droid. Maybe
yeah.
Droid.
Yeah.
But iPhone, it's not that I hate it. It's cool. But I'm just, I go starry-eyed when I see those Evo 3Ds with their dual cameras and their honeycomb and magical graphics. And it's just like, well,
I've been having some problems with my Android phone, not the video, audio video stuff not working well. And I don't know if I need to reset it or what. I use BeyondPod to listen to podcasts, and I paid for that. And it only works about half the time. I have to sometimes reboot the phone to make it work. And that's one of the things I liked about my iPod Touch is it just always worked for podcasts. I know I've complained about that in the past. But
were you using for a podcatcher for your Touch?
Just the embedded or whatever comes with there was an application on it. I had a first gen Touch, and I can't remember what it was now. It just worked.
And could you
I'd sync it. No, I used the
that's because it was a Touch.
Right. I used the Touch, and I would use the sync on it. That was kind of inconvenient, so I thought it'd be better on the Android device, and it's been kind of spotty for me. I just want to get in the car and hit a button and the podcasts come on. That's all I really want it to do, and I want it to track a few things, and I haven't had as good a luck with my Android and with BeyondPod. Sometimes I have to uninstall it and reinstall it. Sometimes I have to edit the feed and delete the feed and re-add it. It's just kind of a pain. I just want that stupid thing to work. You know, so
yeah. Well, I'm using this iCatcher on my iPhone, and I love this thing. This thing works really well. One of the coolest things about it is that it has like a one point. I don't know if you can see. You probably can't see that.
Very nice.
It has a one point
podcast, by the way.
Yeah, I've been to the podcast. It. You know how you can speed up. You can run your audio back at like maybe 1.5 or 2 times.
Right.
Well, that's pretty impractical. 2 times is definitely impractical because you know listen to?
It sounds really fun.
No, it's ridiculous. You can't even catch what they're saying. This one actually has a setting for 1.25, which is actually pretty. It's just about, well, it's just right, actually, you know, because it's faster than, you know, some people speak a little slow. I won't mention any names. Not here tonight. And
uh-oh. Call out. I'm sure chat will pick up on that one.
Could be anybody. Anybody we might know, right? But anyway, no, it's perfect. It speeds it up enough so that you can get through a podcast, an hour podcast, I don't know, whatever the math is, faster than an hour. So maybe you can listen to most of it on a drive to work or back or whatever. And you can understand what they're saying because if people are talking a little bit fast, even at 1.25 speed, it's still, you know, audible. Audible.
You know, it'd be nice as a technology that would go through and take the gaps that are longer than a certain number of seconds out of a podcast to shorten it up from, you know, because not so much on our podcast, maybe here more than not, but there's breaks, there's long audible, you know, where it's just dead air that, you know, people have, like I just made right there, that people have to listen through. And if you shorten those up, it would shorten up the podcast duration by maybe 10 or 15%, which would give you the same effect of speeding it up to 1.25 or 1.5. I know there are some technologies that can do that. Maybe that horsepower to run that on the fly is just too much for most things to achieve. So, Christian, have you seen anything like that from an audio standpoint where it pulls space out?
Not too much, no. Okay. That is a kind of uncommon thing.
Yeah, not uncommon. Maybe you could write that for me.
Hey, you know.
Maybe tonight, right after the podcast, in about 10 minutes.
Go to the sweatshop. Start coding.
Oh, that's good. Rich, what else? Anything else?
Yeah, there's something cool. Actually, back in podcast 34, you guys, Christian was talking about using MVP hosts, and I started to smile because, I don't know, it must have been like maybe, I don't know, 6-7 years ago, I was using MVP hosts on a lot of machines I was setting up, XP machines. And, you know, and I had people like running the MVP host script, you know, the little blue background DOS looking script to, and Christian already explained what host files were about, so I won't get into that. But, yeah, it was kind of funny. But I found an app called Hostman back in that time, Hostman. And I used that to sit in a tray and it would do automatic updates because, it, you know, running XP, you have administrative privileges. Most people run it that way, right? So you logged in, you got admin privileges. Hostman is running at admin privileges. It has no problem downloading and installing an update, you know, to the host file. Well, with Windows 7, you can't do that, you know. Hostman is an older app, so, you know, it doesn't negotiate its way into like getting admin privileges for its little world. So you have to get around that by doing something like this here, which is this is something I came across from thegeekpub.com, and it's called a way to create shortcuts to bypass UAC.
And UAC is user access, right?
Yeah,
that's the thing that pops up for most people.
Yeah,
right. Okay.
Is it user access control or user something control? Anyway, yeah. So
it's the pop-ups you get in Windows saying, do you want to do this? Are you sure you want to do this? Are you sure you want to do that? The one everybody hates. And they always say, yes, I want to do it. I wouldn't have said I wanted to do it if I didn't want to do it.
But it's such a great security feature.
Right. Well, it
saved me. I gotta admit, it saved me.
Yeah, say that. How did that save you, Christian?
I have never been in a process of getting a virus for almost 3 years now, and I just randomly some strange ad came up, and I must have accidentally clicked it instead of closed out of it. And next thing you know, UAC rapid fire. Do you wanna run this program? No. Do you wanna run this program? No. Do you wanna run this program? So I'm thinking, why does my computer keep asking me to run a program that when I wasn't even trying to install a program? So turns out it was trying to install this MSI executable that probably had a whole bunch of goodies in it. So it saved me. Cool. It gave me enough time to keep clicking no and to get rid of the virus before.
Yeah, so Jim, you were saying, you know, it's a pain in the neck. And Christian, you brought up a good point. And I have to laugh at all the people because when I first had to start dealing with UAC, I go, oh, this does, you know, it is a pain in the neck. And but I've learned to live with it because, you know, exactly what Christian was talking about. I understand that could happen. And you won't believe the number of websites out there will give you the shortcuts or ways to, like, disable UAC. And it's like, my God, if you people have to be shown how to disable UAC, you shouldn't disable it, you know? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I guess so.
I'm saying you shouldn't do it, you know? I mean, if you don't know how to do it, if you're not tech enough to know how to do it, then you should probably not mess with it, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that in any other way than what I'm saying is that, you know, you want to be safe, right? So if you don't really know what you're messing with, then you shouldn't mess with it. I mean, there's a reason it's there. You know, it's not. Yeah. You don't think twice about it. Just click it and just go with the deal because that's part of security as far as Windows is concerned. So
I think also it's a lot better than it was in Vista too. I mean, in Vista it was sort of like you were on or off, wasn't it? And now with Windows 7, you've got that level of granularity, so you don't necessarily get pestered by it all the time if you turn it down a little bit.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's much better in Windows 7. And I would encourage people, if you like Rich, what you're saying, if you don't know what you're doing, leave it on. And and it certainly saved Christian's bacon from that installing something.
Saved my reputation of not having a virus for years.
Yeah. I know it's annoying. It only pops up. Windows 7, they seem to have gotten a better handle on it, but it's probably something you might want to consider leaving on.
It seems to learn really well as well. I've seen so stuff that it was prompting me for in the early days on my main Windows 7 PC at home. It stopped prompting me for things once I've said a bunch of times yes, 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 to then adjust itself. I don't know if that's just me or if I've gone and maybe gone in and changed it, but it seems to not be as noisy as it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
Was that something they did in Service Pack 1, maybe, Christian?
For
UAC?
Probably not. I don't think they did much with the actual UAC. They didn't really change many features in Windows 7. It was mostly security-related updates and tweaks. And it was really a cumulative update pack of all the previous KB Windows updates. But I don't think they changed the functionality anyway.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
Christian, hey, let me change the topic real quick. Christian, Bill is struggling out there in chat to get the video. You know, he's getting the spinning wheel on live stream, and so maybe if we talk about this a little bit, we just switched services. So if you're listening to this on the recorded version, it doesn't matter. But we've gone live. We're on live stream now, not Ustream. And what did you do? Did you figure anything out to get that? If you get a spinning wheel on live stream, was something blocking it?
If you get a spinning wheel, chances are you probably have an ad block up blocking the advertisement from running, and it's just endlessly cycling. That's what I think is going on with mine. I haven't tested that yet.
Okay. I'll send a note over to him in the stream and see if he's got an ad blocker set up.
All right.
Yeah, hey, well, let me just finish up with this thing.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
basically,
go.
I just want to say if you do, and Andrew, I'm sure he'll put it in the show notes because, you know, he's the king of show notes.
He is good at it.
Yeah, he's very good at it. Yeah. If you follow what's on this page, you'll be able to have an app that will run. Like, you could throw it into your startup folder in your start menu. Throw a shortcut in your startup folder, and when you boot up your PC, the app will just run because it has admin privileges. So follow, if you're interested in that, follow what's on this page, and it works. It does work perfectly.
Right.
So
very cool.
Yeah, handy. Yeah.
Very good. And you know what, Christian, another week, and I didn't get the music queued up for Christian's Corner. Darn it, I got to get that done. Sorry about that. So,
all right. Well,
Christian's Corner.
There we go.
Corner.
You're up. So.
All right, well, welcome to Christian's Corner. We're going to start at updates from Christian's desk.
Nice little segment cue. I like that.
Yes, so what's going on at Christian's desk? Christian's desk is filled with his Visual Studio compiler and his coding. So recently released from Maple Grove Partners is the 1.2 update for Magic Wake on LAN for Windows Home Server, version 1, of course. And that incorporates new features for scheduling wake-up timers, so you can schedule your clients to wake up daily. And again, that is a client-less solution for Wake on LAN. So that is on the shelf for 30-day trial and $7 to purchase. So,
and that's for home servers, right?
Correct.
For Windows home servers.
One. Yeah. So that's up to date version 1.2.715.2 is the latest version. And also on the
Christian, we pimped that fairly solidly for you last
correct.
Night on the home
I heard.
Show.
I went back and played, and I was like, yeah, that's my Jim Collins and John Zed.
Made sure we took care
of
you.
It's my boys. So, and on the workbench right now is a subsonic prototype player. Sinjay asked me to be the developer for the Windows Home Server installer branch for Subsonic. So the first portion of this project is going to be to build in a functional player that uses the .NET framework and interfaces with the Subsonic API, which means that there'll be a individual Windows player that'll connect to your Subsonic server, and you'll have an iTunes-like interface where you can connect and play your Subsonic without going on the web. And then you can... And then when that is finished, I'll have all the APIs already set and done for making that interface built into the home server console, which means in theory you could be jamming on Subsonic over your remote desktop consoles and clients. So that's in the works. So,
you know, I've been getting a lot of questions about Subsonic via Twitter, and when I say a lot, I mean a couple. But you're seeming through the show to be bringing out some Subsonic Mojo, and so that's maybe something we can, if folks got questions about subsonic stuff, they could drop that out there on the Facebook page, and we can get a little traffic going via Facebook. Yeah.
So
you got to get your dad on here, Christian, because I don't know if you know this, but Jim, I don't know, or Andrew, have you ever been to Christian's website for subsonic? I was streaming.
I stream off a fair bit, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was streaming Blu-ray, and it looked great.
Really?
Well, from Christian's house, yeah. His dad's like been, well, you know, he's tweaked the thing out as much as he can, you know?
Yeah. Well, Gary's scheduled to come on next week, actually, Rich. So, Christian, why don't you pimp your dad a little bit to have some subsonic discussion ready to go?
Sure.
And we'll talk more about that.
Cool. So that's on the workbench for development, and that wraps up what's on my desk. And moving on to deal of the week. You know, this is something that I don't really buy because I don't really have the need for it, but a lot of people are shopping for them. A lot of people are not getting good results. They're returning their products. It's laptop cooling pads. And generally, they're hard to buy. And if you read reviews online, you'll see all sorts of things like the rubber feet fall off within 24 hours. The cooling pad actually makes the computer hotter and not cooler. Just a lot of weird, weird stuff. So if you look around on Newegg, you'll see there's a cooling pad by Vantech, and that's the highest rated one they have. And there is no 5-star rated cooling pad on Newegg. You know, Newegg has 0 through 5 egg review system where users can comment in on their products that they've purchased. And there was no 5-star rated egg for a cooling pad where there was more than a couple votes. You know, we're talking north of 100 votes. So this cooling pad, the Antech, it's called the Antech Unbeatable Notebook Cooler 200. Really looks like a nice deal. It's a bit on the pricey side. It's around 55, but you know, it meets the most needs for the most people. Some of them, like the Coolmaster on Newegg, it's really nice. It keeps things cool, but it's huge and it's very impractical to bring with you in a backpack or take with you in your laptop. So this is kind of a nice size. It isn't flimsy and cheapo. So that is something that it's a very interesting deal of the week because it's not a deal price-wise, it's a deal quality assurance-wise because I think a lot of people are getting these laptop cooling pads and it's just not doing anything for them. They come with bad accessories, short USB cords, the power bricks don't always work. It's just a very flimsy product that, you know, they can be very helpful for your laptop, but if you don't get the right one, it's just doing you more harm than good. So check that out. It's on Amazon right now. You can't really buy it through Newegg. So take a look at that. Go ahead, Jim.
Hey, Christian. So Bill piped in and said, hey, do you think because he's having trouble connecting to the show right now.
All right.
Live. And he says, and this is funny. He said, ask Christian if he thinks the host file hack in Christian's corner might be the issue.
Yep. Tell him that's what it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell him if he runs the MVPS batch command to turn it back off, it'll be fine, and then he can turn it back on when the show is done.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll check back in and
see. That's the first
thing
I've heard though, that it's prevent from using services before. It's the first time I've heard it actually block a service from running.
That is kind of interesting. So if you followed Christian's Corner last week, that was last week we talked about that, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
And you might have some trouble listening to the show. All right, speed tip of the week.
Vroom. So it's not like I'm going to make your PC faster this week. It's like I'm going to make your life easier. So everyone's hopping on IE9. Not everyone. No, I'm just kidding. It's still a pretty small user base, but it's consistently growing. And one of the things...
It's grown a bunch, actually. I was looking at some numbers from our corporate website, and it's making surprising jumps each month in usage. So it is getting out there, and I've got it on all my machines at this point.
Yeah.
So it's making it a quick entry out there for sure.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that all the other browsers have that IE9 still doesn't have is a native spell check tool. So if you head over to tweaks.com, it'll be included in the show notes. There is a there's a spell check add-in called IE Spell, quite simple, but it's a very clean stripped tool that, you know, gives you your spell check. And there's also another one called Specky, Specky, And that's what adds your familiar office word red squiggly line when there's a spelling mistake on the page. So I just thought those were interesting because I know if I go on Chrome, I feel the safety of being able to go to a Russian website and have it automatically translated and tell me all the words it translated wrong and spell check. So I just think it's kind of neat. And hopefully it will be something that's incorporated by the time we get around to IE10. So that's and it's considered an unofficial add-in, but from what I've heard, it's a very clean and streamlined utility and add-on. So go ahead and check that out.
Christian, do you think it's really going to take till IE10 to get spell check in the browser?
Well, if they haven't done it for the first 9 versions, who knows how long? Much.
It's never had spell check?
I don't believe so. Not a native spell check application. I mean, go back through IE7 and IE8. I don't think it has it.
Really? I thought it was in 8, but it was they took it out in 9. Rich, don't give it away. So yeah, so you think it's coming? I thought that was maybe that's my mistake, and we can get some clarification on that. I thought it was in all the way up until 8, and then 9 broke it, and that they were trying to bring it back. But that seems crazy. That's another reason not. I mean, I only use IE9 for my corporate email, and then everything else is in Chrome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and that's kind of my life. I was slow to put IE9 on our home PCs. I told you guys a story. Sarah not uninstalled it, but basically hid all the icons for it on every PC she uses. She's a Firefox user. And so when I went to go to the PCs, I'm like, hey, where's Internet Explorer? She's like, oh, no, you can't get to IE. And I had no idea she was that adamant against it. But I've since upgraded everybody to IE9. In fact, the church that I support, I just moved them to IE9 a couple weeks ago. It seems stable enough at this point to use, although without the spell check, and I forgot that was missing. That's kind of a royal pain.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So cool. News you can use.
News you can use. Google is making.
Not yet, Rich. Hold on. Not yet, Rich. Christian's got one more thing. Hold on.
There's news you can use.
I'll cue you in for the outtake. Go.
All right. So here we go. News you can use. Google is. So we get all this great news packed Twitter update, Google News, everything with Google Plus. Everyone's going after it like demons and wolves, you know, looking for good meat, and they're thinking Google Plus is their good meat for social networking. So Google's thinking that they're gonna build this out, and as a result, Google Labs is officially going goodbye. So if you had some betaware products, if you're running Google Labs and your webmaster tools, if you're a developer, and there's some other spotty applications that are part of that whole Google Labs project, it is now going goodbye. So if you want reasonings, IMHO, it's probably because Google Plus is here to stay.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with you. I think they've got a solid launch on that platform. And my video just froze up. Speaking of a solid launch on a platform, I guess Skype doesn't have a solid launch. And I'm making a funny face. That's great. Yeah, Christian, I think you're right. I think Google Plus is around to stay. Although right now it's 97% tech guys, and the other 3%, I don't even know why they're there.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, let me see if I can get
I think
the
that's going to be interesting, too. I think some of the products that, or some of the items that they're going to drop may prove a little damaging. You know, some of the things that they're going to drop Google Toolbar for Firefox. You know, I think things like that. And some of the add-ons that come out of Labs are just awesome. So you'd hope that some of the Lab options in, say, Gmail and Google Calendar, you'd hope that they'll get merged into the mainstream product.
Yeah, they probably will. I mean, I can't imagine they'd abandon that stuff. But as for the name Google Labs, farewell.
Goodbye and gone. You know, one of the things on Google Plus that's been interesting is I was waiting for the circles to run out of steam. So I was getting a few people, you know, those circle invites that you get on there. I was kind of waiting for that to run low, and then I thought, okay, it's reached its course. It's actually picking up speed for me at this point now. So I'm getting more and more folks a day who are asking, not asking, but are, that tells me, right? It gives me the option, hey, this person put you in their circle. Do you want to put you them in yours? And yeah. So I really do think that's going to get big. It's going to get pretty big, pretty fast. All right, let's wrap up Christian's Corner. Rich, I know you have a special. You got a special ready. Hold that up to your microphone and let her rip. There you go. That's good. That's good. I like it. A little music-fi. There you go. You call that music-fi?
Rich, you're hired.
What is it? Songify.
Songify. You're hired, Rich. You're hired.
All right. Yeah. I wrote that in about 5 seconds.
I like it. And did you muted and then spoke that in there?
Muted it. Yeah, you saw me and I was talking away. Just you're saying hired, Christian's Rich. Corner a couple of times and get
Rich,
your geek
I'll
on.
I'll get you the lyrics and we'll be in business.
All right, man.
That's awesome. Right here on the Home Tech Podcast.
Yep. More than just a tech podcast.
Yeah. Andrew, what do you got for us today?
Okay. So some couple of things in the Google Plus thread. There's a service that I found via Nermal TV a couple of days ago where you can create an RSS feed for your Google Plus profile. So if you're like me and you find that it scrolls just that little bit too fast, you can then consume it in an RSS feeder. So the Google Plus ID is still currently a SID, so it's a great big long string of numbers. And so you basically go to this site, you put in, it's plusfeed.appspot.com/ then your Google Plus ID. And that'll then let you put that into your RSS feeder of choice and consume it through a browser or whatever you use for reading your RSS feeds.
How does it handle the circles?
I haven't seen how it handles circles yet. I think it's more about what comes up in your personal stream.
Okay.
So I think if you have a circle that publishes into your stream, then it'll still capture it.
So it's your full screen, no circle restrictions on it. It's, you know, you can basically, like, so when I'm really interested in hearing what you guys have to say, I go to my tech guys. I have a tech guy circle, so I click on that, and it just limits what you guys are doing. And it's really how I find the hangouts, because I don't want to hang out with the public for the most part. I want to hang out with you guys. So I can use that tech guy circle. But that RSS feed grabs the whole stream. Is that right, Andrew?
Yeah, so what they say is that they capture the user ID stream. So I guess that means it captures everything at this stage.
All right.
I think it's something that Google will probably build on. So I think it's just a matter of time before you can, you know, you can take off a feed based on what's happening in any part of your stream.
Who's got the loud mouse?
Yeah, come on.
Who is that? Is that you, Andrew?
That's not me.
Oh, is that Rich?
Is that you? I guess so. Let me do it again.
Yeah, do it again.
Yeah, that's making the noise? Wow. Okay.
It sounds like someone with one of those washboards, you know.
I was rolling the middle mouse wheel.
That's awesome.
Scrolling up and down. Oh, okay, I won't touch it again.
No, you're good. So, yeah. Andrew, you just made a good point. I think they've got a fairly good base, and I think they're just going to keep adding things to it week over week after week as Google Plus moves forward. I think it's, you know, we're seeing a platform very similar to Facebook, maybe a little bit behind. I think it could quickly surpass it from a functionality standpoint.
Oh, yeah.
Hangouts, you and I have messed with chat on, not you and I was messing with Lux, and I think even with Mike Howard on Facebook with chat, that's still only point to point. So you can't start a group chat on Facebook. The video that is, you know, there's a Skype integration with Facebook right now to make that work for video. The video is spectacular. I mean, if you really want point to point and you want great video, right now nothing is better than Facebook. It's just crazy good. So if you haven't tried that yet, if you're a Facebook user and you want to try the video, you can just go out and look for a little tiny video icon. It's not very intuitive to use. You got to really look for it in there, and they're working hard to make that useful. But that's only point to point. Google Plus, of course, is groups, a lot more handy.
Yeah, they've got a huge competitor to them now, don't they?
You know what? I love this battle that's out there now between Skype and Facebook, which is a Skype-enabled or a Skype engine for their chat. And then Google, with Google Plus coming, I've always wanted to use video chat for everything, and everybody's a little hesitant to do it. I think it's gonna. This will drive it mainstream, and I'm more than excited about it. I think. You know, video chat has revolutionized the way we do podcasting, and I think for people who live far away from each other, I think it's, you know, Andrew, you and I chat via video at least two or three times a week, and that changes the equation. I mean, it's just it's the right. I think this makes it mainstream. So,
yep, I totally agree.
So, if you don't have a good webcam, better get one.
Oh yeah, I can highly recommend the Logitech C910, which has got stereo mics, 1080p.
Nice, and you just got that.
Carl Zeiss Optics. Yep, that was a birthday present from the wife.
Yeah, Michelle picked that up for you, so that's great. Now we're I'm noticing that maybe you haven't shaved in a couple days. Is that?
Oh, come on, you're really starting to sound much like now.
Oh jeez.
Scruffy tech, you're a scruffy tech guy. That's what I've been getting told.
I like it. I like it. Right. What else you got for us, Andrew?
Yeah, the other thing I found was a service called Campster, which is CAMMSTER, which lets you use your webcam to be like a motion detection security camera. So I know we talked about IP cameras quite a few shows ago, and you know this is sort of another service in a similar vein. So you can set up your webcam connected to a PC, and with it in motion detect mode, it'll send you an email every time it gets a motion go through the frame. So you know you could set it up in the front door of the house, and when the postman comes or the UPS guy or whichever courier service you have in your part of the world, you know, you can then capture that still shot, and it'll send it to you as an email for free, or you can pay $2 for 200 SMS events.
Oh, but email's free.
And email's free.
Well, shoot, that's worth trying.
Yeah, so I'm gonna have a crack at it, and I'll point the webcam out the window of the house and spy on the cat.
Yeah, that's good.
Because not much happens in our backyard other than the cat walking up and down the path. So
that's right. It's a pretty quiet backyard. Now you'd had a cam set up back there that I'd logged into at one point in time, and I could actually move that one around. It was a little industrial cam, and so I could get a look at your backyard.
Yeah.
So Campster.com. It's $1 to get started, and then
a dollar, $2 for 100 SMS. $2 for 200 SMSs.
But free if you go email. Oh, that's worth a try. That'd be kind of fun. Last night we were messing around with this, and I'll show it in the video here. So I've got this. I guess I'll back up. I've got this Hue cam, right? It's HUE. It's an HD cam, 1.3 megapixel. That's got the little button on the back and a little focus thing on the front. Very handy because you can make it, you know, turn in all kinds of different directions and do different kinds of things. So this might be one of those things where you set up and maybe just pop it above the window, right?
Yeah,
little spy cam that you put out there. Last night, what I did before, as I was logging off, I pointed it, and you can't see it. I'll have to move the Drobo. But for the home server show last night, I had the Drobo in the camera. So last night I set this camera up. We created a Drobo cam, and I just live streamed just the front of the Drobo to anybody who wanted to watch it. It's not terribly exciting.
Look at the flashing lights. They're so pretty.
I would blink them from time to time so that folks would know that the Drobo cam was still on. But, you know, there's this thing going on. If you go out to Ustream or Livestream, there's these cams where they've set them up on birdhouses and in dog houses and whatever, and you can just watch these animals 24/7 do their thing.
It's kind of crazy, isn't it?
It's insane. And They're getting hundreds of people to watch them at a time. Hundreds.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah, it's interesting you talk about that with animals. It's interesting. A couple of my friends have Twitter accounts for their dogs, and their dogs are more active on Twitter than they are.
Jeez. Yeah.
And they got a keyboard by their like water dish.
And there's this whole sort of language of, you know, how dogs and cats communicate on Twitter. And I mean, I get in enough trouble for using Twitter, let alone tweeting as a cat or the goldfish. You know,
yeah.
This place is for the dogs.
that seems to be, if you go out and troll Ustream or Livestream or Justin.tv, some of the more popular, and I think this got started, there was a group that was using IP cameras to monitor eagle and eagle nesting, because it's really important. Some eagles are endangered species, and so they were trying to learn kind of how that habitat worked and how they could help it better, and so they put these webcams on them, and they found out people were very interested in just watching these birds just in their everyday environment. And so more and more people have begun to set up these animal cams, especially for wild animals, to kind of see how they, you know, for I guess those folks that don't get out of the basement often, to go out and post that. So if you're, if you're bored and you got time to burn and you're not podcasting all week, you can go out and check out one of those animal cams and give it a try. Christian, anything anything at your house worth putting a cam on and monitoring all day?
Oh, geez. Well, there's nothing creeping and crawling, so unless you want to watch the fascinating array of lights and LEDs I have in my beast, I have green
the
LEDs.
Beast cam.
I have green LEDs, orange LEDs, blue LEDs, red fan LEDs, and maybe we should do a HP Media Smart light show and rotate the light show in and out. So
I like it. One of the features of Livestream that we haven't really messed with yet, we're going to do this video over the next couple months and make sure we can get this part right, and it's working well, is I can actually grab cameras from, say Rich would be streaming his desktop on Livestream. Wouldn't have to be out into the world. He could just, the camera, you know, the screen capture could be on. I can grab that here locally and feed that into a queue. So, Rich, say you were talking about Firefox and this plugin, I could queue your desktop up and show it live on this stream, which is really pretty cool. So, as we move to the future of video, I'm hoping to do a lot more of those kinds of things. Because, Christian, especially with you, when you talk about some of the coding things that you do and some of the programming, how nice would it be to maybe start to maybe show a few things in advance? Hey, we're thinking about this. The subsonic add-in looks like that. And you know, just be able to cut over to the camera feed and be able to show that right in the live stream.
Definitely.
That'd be kind of cool. Yeah. That's one of the reasons, actually, this Hue camera that I bought, one of the reasons I wanted to try it was to create a, put it on the table like this. Let's see. Hold on, let me get right. There we go. Put it in the camera like this. And I'm watching a delayed feed. That's really bad. Then use it for your phone when you're trying to show demos on the phones. Yeah, you just put the phone on the table underneath it and do your thing. And then when Google Plus gets good enough, I can actually get multiple streams, you know, in the window, in the feed. So anyway, some cool stuff coming up with video. And if you're listening to this, if you're listening to the podcast on the recorded version, we do the live feed every Thursday night around 7 o'clock p.m. Central. And you would be welcome to come out, jump in chat. Tonight there was a couple guys, although I think it was mostly Mike Howard trying to troubleshoot Bill's problem getting the live feed going. So, Bill, nice try. I don't know if you ever got in. Maybe he did. And installing Christian's hack from last week might have not set him up for success for this show. You guys have to troubleshoot that.
Alrighty.
In the off season, I'll remind folks if they want to, if they've got questions, comments, anything they would like to get to us, and we do appreciate your, feedback to us. You can send us a email, podcast@theaverageguy.tv, and if it's good, we'll read it on the show. Ken, thanks for sending us your email this week, and I appreciate your feedback on that. Let's jump on to Facebook, guys. We'll have to be a little active with that to kind of prime the pump. So. Christian and Andrew, Rich, you'd be welcome to jump out there and let's try and use. See, if, let's just try it, and if it doesn't work, we'll just kill it. But jump in there, search for the Average Guy Podcast on Facebook, and jump in. I will allow you in, and then we can try to use that as some quick forms. I would be most interested in some comments, not just on questions that you have, but how we use that, because I do like that Facebook format. It's not another thing you have to sign up for, right? Most forums, you got to get another username and password or sync that with something, and so I'd be interested to see, can we make Facebook work for us and make this work? Other than that, gentlemen, thanks for coming in tonight. Andrew, good to have you, and I know your Friday is you're midway through your Friday, and the weekend is almost here, so have a great weekend, and get out and enjoy some nice weather that you're having.
Absolutely. Same to everyone else. If you're part of the world, it's a cracking weekend. Go out and enjoy it.
Yeah, absolutely. Christian, thanks for jumping in tonight, and I know you're enjoying summer, and we expect some more things from you. I think this is the plan to have the subsonic add-in done before the summer's over?
Yeah, I'm hoping to get a version 1 out probably late August if it pans out all right. Player's going to come before the add-in. So.
Very cool. Rich, is that something you're going to try?
Definitely. I can't get away from Christian's Corner, right?
Yeah, you're the new...
No. Of course I'm going to try it, yeah. Good. I'm looking forward to it.
Good. Rich, good having you out tonight, and appreciate you coming in, and we'll get you rescheduled. As soon as we're done here, we'll get you rescheduled for the next one, and I appreciate you coming out and being a part of the podcast.
Yep, sure, great.
All right, guys, this will wrap up another Home Tech Podcast, and we'll do it all again next Thursday, 7 p.m. Central. You guys have a good night, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks, guys. Good night.
Good night, guys.